Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen. In Studio A and Studio B is Miss Janelle Hehe. Good morning, Janelle. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good.
Yeah, wow, it was a wild Friday night, and I was telling you in the production meeting a second ago that I just wanted to let our listeners know what's going on. So last night, the first Friday, well, it wasn't first Friday, but it was the first Friday night that I've been out in probably a year. I usually come home Friday night and hang out with the boys, and we do puzzles, play cards, you know, we order a pizza. But last night, luckily for me, I had a babysitter. So I, by myself, went out. And I went over to an establishment on Grand Avenue, and then I went downtown St. Paul. I wasn't searching for anything, and one of my colleagues says, "Hey, I want to hang out." So I said, "Come on." So we go over there. We're both around the same age, and we're expecting these grandiose kind of social functions like we used to see back in the day in downtown St. Paul on Grand Avenue. The first establishment, I'd just like to say, Janelle, the first establishment we went to was deader than a doorknob. At 7:45. And so I stayed there because I liked the restaurant. I ordered some food, ate, had a big glass of ice water. They have some fresh kind of weird, eccentric ice water there. And then got in the car. I said, you know what? I said, there has to be something happening downtown. So I went downtown off St. Peter, drove around. And I saw some places with awnings and valet parking, $15. I said, oh, this must be it. And I walk in, park the car, find a meter, park the car. It was about 9:30 then, and the meters, they charge you till 10, so you do have to pay, or you will get a ticket with the possibility of being told. You're supposed to follow those rules, period. It's the law. So I paid the meter. I walk into this place, this high-end restaurant and bar, and I go around to the bar side to sit down to order some of that sparkling water, which I love so well. There's nobody in here. There's not a dang soul in here. I could have that whole place could just be mine. There's like five people in the restaurant. There's zero people in the bar area, and I'm not going to say the name of the establishment, but it's an upscale. It's really nice. It's in downtown St. Paul, right off St. Peter there, not too far from the Science Museum. And it's an Italian place, and it's really, really nice. And it shocked me. And my question is, why? What the hell is happening in downtown St. Paul? Why is it dead after 5 p.m.? What's going on? So it kind of drives me crazy when you know these businesses survive on people coming in and buying dinner, lunch, whatever, but it just really shocked me. Any thoughts on that? Because, you're the social person, the butterfly. You might know why these three places are dead in St. Paul, 5 p.m. What say you?
You know, Minneapolis, I've noticed, too, in the last 5 years, has been a decline and some of the hot social spots as far as attendance. I don't know if it's because of the economy, if it's fear of violence, or if it's just people wanting to stay home more. It's so much going on that a lot of people that I know personally, they rarely go out. Like you said, you rarely go out on a Friday night. You're at home. You order a pizza with the boys, and you guys are playing games. And I think it's a lot of people are becoming more homebodies. I think due to the economy and just having that mentality. In Minneapolis, a lot of the places I went to 5 years ago were a lot more. There are a lot more people involved and wanting to go and be in attendance, but just I don't know what it is. The establishments that you went to, are they primarily an African-American crowd or a mixed crowd? Or
No. I don't know where there is an African-American crowd. Okay, so
okay.
I just, and I don't even look at establishments, you know, if they're black or white. Yeah, I mean, I've been to some great black places. I've been to some great neutral places. And so
right.
when I go out to what I like. So if I like a place on Grand Avenue, I'm going there not because it's black or white, but because I like it. Okay? And if I go downtown, it's not black or white. It's because I like it. But a lot of people here on Facebook Live, and thank you for those that are watching us on Facebook Live or listening to us on Facebook Live. You will never see our faces. Thanks for listening, but it's just really strange, and it seems, I know it's Lent, there's a boys hockey tournament, there's all kinds of crap going on, but still, how can those businesses survive? And you said something about the economy, and we do have a special guest holding that we want to get to. The economy, you know, Trump is our president, and the economy is great overall. I know there's some pockets of blight in Minnesota and different areas, but we'll get to that in a second, but you know, I guess I'm just going to leave that on the table and keep moving because I don't understand why St. Paul, and this is not new. This has been for a long time that the downtown area is just not popping like it used to. So I'm pretty disappointed. And hopefully we'll see something different, something that will change. Huh. To switch gears, you know, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is the current, well, she's the incumbent for the 5th Congressional District. She, again, every 2 years, all those elected officials, congressional elected officials have to rerun for their seats. And as in every election year, and whenever we can get here on the Ron and Don Show some candidates that are running for office, we like to do that to give people that listen to us an opportunity to analyze and understand these candidates. And this morning, I am very pleased after a back and forth for a little while with his point person. It's nothing negative. It's just like we have to arrange it because this man's a soldier. He works full time, and we have to get him when he can get to us. But I am very happy this morning to bring on Minnesota CD5 candidate Chris Kelly. We want to find out about his passion for public service, his work ethic. He's a soldier. He's in some conflicts here. He actually does have the Independent Party. He's running as an Independent Conservative, and he does have the endorsement of the Independent Party. Mr. Kelly, welcome to our program this morning.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you don't have to call me sir. I know that's the military thing because we both, I was in
habit.
The Army. And I know, I understand, and I might slip and call you sir a couple of times too. So, but anyway, I'm going to start with a few questions, and then I'll pass it over to Janelle. She might have a few questions.
All right.
I basically don't plan ahead of time with any of the candidates that we interview on the air because I like it to be raw, and from the conversation, I might develop some more questions. So, but I like to start out without beating around the bush, and before you tell us a little bit about yourself, how are you going to beat Ilhan Omar is my first question.
Getting out, speaking with people. I think that's really the biggest thing. There's a lot of angst going on, especially this election cycle. Everything's so hyper-partisanship. It's kind of ridiculous. You know, my motive for jumping in initially was, you know, Ilhan's a very dismissive person, disrespectful towards our country, that the 9/11 comments she made way back, you know, kind of struck a chord with me. You know, you can either complain, you know, about something and or do something. I decided to throw my hat in the ring. This seemed like a great opportunity for me. I've had a little bit of dabble in politics prior to this, a little bit with I ran for state senate. I didn't get the endorsement back in 2016, district senate, district 51 down in Eagan and Burnsville area.
Okay.
I enjoy politics. I enjoy getting out there talking with the people. I think with my background as a soldier and a serving police officer at this time, I can connect with people. I seem to, you know, seems to be a real good strong point. So I figured, why not run? Give it a shot. I chose the Independence Party because, you know, I'm really not fully in line with the GOP. I ran with them. You know, I'm a union guy, first and foremost. I also have some disagreements how they want to handle immigration. And quite frankly, you know, when the first 2 years, when they had full control of the House and the Senate, they really didn't seem to get too much done. Yeah, we got the tax cuts, but they didn't deal with the immigration issue. They did not deal with the health care issue, two big things. And going on the Democrat side, other than being a union supporter, I have nothing in common with them. They've taken such a hard left, it scares me. So there's another good reason to jump in and try and make a change, try to make a case. So I'm honored to have the Independence Party endorsement. So that's kind of where I'm coming from, at least on the politics side.
Okay, that's great. Good to hear that. Let me give you a little background. From 2006 up to 2018, and I know you're running as an independent conservative when you're endorsed by the independents, but I feel this is necessary historical information to get it in, to get this information while we're discussing it. Personally, I've sat back, and then with a think tank I work with, we've sat back and we've watched candidates from the conservative side and independent candidates and green candidates run unsuccessfully against the Ellisons of the world and the Omars of the world. What strategy, if you can talk about it, besides talking to the people? After I found out from your point person that you were willing to be on the air, I called around to a bunch of people that I know in my community, in the Hispanic Latino community, and in that are ingrained in the North Minneapolis and Richfield, Fridley, Columbia Heights, and those areas. I said, hey, what do you know about Chris Kelly? He's running for Congress. What do you know? And out of all the people I talked to, which is about eight people, not all at once, but over a two-week time span, three of them could give me enough information that your information was getting out there. The others are actually tuned into this interview right now. I personally invited them via Messenger, and I see their names popping up here on the screen on Facebook Live, so I'm glad they're here. So with that said, what strategy or mechanism besides, and we'll get into what you do and all that, besides going and talking to people, have you scheduled? I mean, you know this is an uphill battle for you. All summer parades, all that craziness that goes on before the election.
Oh, absolutely.
So I guess I probably need to ask you, what other strategies? Because I'm being really, really honest with you, sir. I'm looking at this Ilhan Omar machine, and like you said, it's very dismissive, monetized, and it's powerful. And I don't necessarily dislike, as a journalist on this show, I'm going to be objective. I'm not going to hate one side or the other. I don't care who calls in, Democrat, Republican, Green, or whatever, or we don't care. But getting back to my point, what strategy, other strategies, do you think that will put you ahead of the pack in this game to get noticed on a national radar as going after and trying to beat Ilhan Omar?
You know, well, again, the thing that's working against her is just the hard left stance that she's making. You know, there's a lot of promises, and there's no way of her paying for this. It's all, you know, a lot of, what would you call it, the identity politics. I think that's really striking people negatively at this point, and people aren't happy. You know, we've had a lot of Democrats reach out to us and interest in what's in my running, and also on the Republican side. It's just been so hyper-partisan that we think there's a really good shot at it. I know it's an uphill battle. I'll be the first to admit that. But I think really the point is, you know, saying, you know, getting out there, delivering a solid message, you know, being the middle of the road, being one, you know, being a Minnesotan, you know, we don't own what she says. You know, we're a little more reasonable. We want to be able to work with both sides. We want to get things done. I want to be focused on the district. And that's the other thing is she's not been focused on the district. She's been looking outward. I think your responsibility is to look inward. And that's really the key thing is get that message out there and try and get some decent legislation done. I mean, there are things I do want to get done. The biggest issue right now, which she's ignoring, is crime. Okay, of all the candidates running, I think I'm pretty much, I won't call myself an expert, but I'm pretty familiar with what's going on in the district. I have 22 years in Minneapolis, but we're seeing a lot of issues, and they're not being addressed. So again, using that expertise, using that experience is calling that out and be able to make, get a solution done. And I would like to get some legislation done, get a crime bill out there, get some more funding with for the local police departments and dealing with the opioid addiction, which comes along with all this crime, and dealing with some other issues.
Okay.
So that's kind of goal, getting your message out there and getting out and talking with people.
Okay. Tell us about, you said you're a police officer. Can you give us a little background about yourself, your military, you being a police officer, where you police, and things like that? So let me give you a couple minutes. Just tell our listeners everything that you'd want them to know about you. Please, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I joined the military at 18. I left high school. I'm originally from Hibbing, Minnesota, so most of my extended family is still up in that area in northern Minnesota. I'm an Iron Ranger, proud to say that. Father was a union pipe fitter. My mother was a homemaker, and she worked off and on when we got older. So in addition to having an extended family, just spent a lot of time with on both sides. I think that was a excellent upbringing. It's unique. A lot of our, like my son now, my extended family is up in the northern part of the state, and my wife's family is out in California. So it is a good chance to see that. So I grew up with my family all around me. I joined the Army in 1988, served for 6 years, went to the first Gulf War in middle, about 90, 91. Got out of the Army in 1994 on the active side. I stayed with the reserve side. Went to college, back up in Hibbing, the Range Technical College, got my law enforcement degree. Still maintained and did some active duty time afterwards until I got hired at Minneapolis in 98. So I've been a patrol officer in Minneapolis since 1998, served primarily. I did work in the north side training, northeast I also trained in, and then ended up in the 5th Precinct, which is southwest Minneapolis. For the last, 21 years. So I've been a patrol officer, a beat officer, worked with the community response team, which that's primarily narcotics and, dealing with other crime issues, major crime issues. I did do some supervisory time. I was detailed as a sergeant for a while, worked on an overnight shift. And now I am back working a 911 car on an overnight shift now. So that's why it's hard for us to kind of get on, for me to get, get time to get on the show at this point. So I just came off a shift a little while ago. The Army I stuck with also. I retired in 2016, retired with rank sergeant major in the military intelligence field. So I did intelligence analysis and as a counterintelligence analysis also. Great experience, 27 years total, wouldn't change it for the world. I actually kind of miss it, but, the military is a young man's game and I'm getting up there a little bit. So, I'm 49 now. So it was time to get out in the last couple of years. I'm married and my wife's a police officer in Minneapolis also. And then we have a 5-year-old at home.
That's a lot. And 49, you're so old, my God. Anyway.
No, I know. Well, old for the Army. How about that?
You're right. That's very interesting. And about what you said about the military, I tell all my friends and some of my students, I said, you know what? I wouldn't trade that time for anything. Although I only did a few years, I would not trade that experience. And so I'm very glad to hear that. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
With that said, you had said something earlier about getting funding, crime bills, and things like that. And I'm very interested. What are you seeing in the 5th Precinct? I mean, I know in the 5th Precinct in South Minneapolis, there's some hotbeds from Blooming, from the 38th Fourth Avenue, First Street, Second Street, Nicollet Avenue. Heavy drug traffic, mostly crack cocaine. 38th in Chicago, that area, a lot of gang activity. 38th in Portland, and things like that. But you're a police officer riding in a squad. What are you seeing that needs to be addressed the most that will benefit the community and not lock a bunch of people up?
No, I got it. You know, the first thing, and a lot of people, I was at on the north side speaking with a few people. This is more of a gun thing, you know, concerned with all the gun violence. But, you know, surprisingly, everybody said they need more cops. You know, our chief came out a few months back, said he'd like to, you know, get us up another 400 police officers. You know, probably that won't happen. But what I can say is we do need more bodies. You know, we are short. The biggest thing we're seeing on the street, we're seeing a lot of overdoses. And, you know, that's been in the news. That's not really a surprise. It's still going and you know, nobody's, you know, at the state level upper was really making enough noise to put a dent in this. You know, the other issues, we are seeing a lot of carjackings, a lot of gun violence, of course, and that's a concern. So in addition to having, you know, having enough staff for 911 responders, which we need, we always could use more. We kind of lost that proactiveness that we had due to the fact that we're shorthanded. And you know, again, it's, you know, like, you know, an analogy with the military is you got to hold the ground. You know, if you just drive through it and go away, well, you know, people come back out and cause problems. And we know where hot spots are. You just need the resources to, you know, a presence to kind of keep that, you know, keep it away. You know, you're not always going to solve everything. And I'm not saying we need to lock up everybody. You know, it's not jump out on everybody, harass them or anything, but you know, we do know who the problem makers are, and we know who to give the attention to. And I'm not talking the little crimes. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. So I would like to see more officers myself. You know, the chief doesn't need to, you know, me to say that, but, you know, as a guy on the ground, you know, we, you know, sometimes we're at our minimum staffing, and, you know, all we can do is be reactive, answer 911 calls. I'd like to see some proactive work. You know, keeping these main corridors safe, keeping the dope dealers off the street. Again, targeting the higher level crimes. Well, and even you know what, you need a presence in, you know, uptown, downtown. You're talking about why is nobody going downtown St. Paul? Probably the same reason nobody's going downtown Minneapolis. It's the violence. People are kind of rattled.
Okay.
People are kind of rattled.
I want to let everybody know we're this is an interview, live interview with Minnesota congressional candidate for CD5, Chris Kelly. He's live on the air with us this morning, and I appreciate him calling in. We're not done. I just want to let people know because I want to follow up on one with one more question, and I want to toss it over to Janelle, see if she has any questions, which would be great
sure.
from her perspective. But my question before I toss it over to Janelle is that. Well, it's a statement and a question. I grew up on 37th in Portland. My mom had a business there, a house there, and it's within the 5th precinct. And I remember from 4th grade till I was a senior at Minneapolis Central, the old Minneapolis Central, the police officers in the neighborhood knew my mom, they knew my dad, they knew where I lived, and I wasn't a troublemaker. I was a band nerd. But if I should happen to even look like I was going the wrong way, I would call him. His nickname was Officer Friendly. I said, "Oh, crap, officer." And he'd be at my mom's gate. And, yeah, saw him running around with some kids he shouldn't be running around with. And my mom would give me that look like, go pick a switch. So I guess my question is, how far have we gotten away from that good community policing model, and will we be able to get back to that point where there's respect, concern for the people in blue because they have to go home, too, to their families every night. And that collaboration with different communities that might not look like, you know, the police officers or the community, how do we get back to that model that seemed to be doing pretty good in the 70s and early 80s in that particular precinct? So I'll let you go ahead and answer and over to Janelle.
Well, it goes back to Manning. You know, I actually, myself and my wife, who's a police officer, we worked as beat officers in the Lake Street area, Carmel Square. It's off of Lake Street in Pillsbury area. There's a large Somali population, Somali Mall there. Worked there for a number of years, and they got rid of that beat car. Yeah, primarily, I'm sure, because of staffing. You know, just 1 year it's there, and next year, oh, sorry, that car's gone. Go back to 911 or go back to another shift or, you know. And it really, we just need more bodies for that. To me, that was very effective. You know, even being a white guy in the Somali district, everybody knew me. You know, it really didn't matter. They liked the presence. Anybody likes a presence there where you're walking in business, having a cup of coffee, you know, interacting, positive interactions. You know, the kids start knowing who you are. They know you by your car number if you're driving through. I mean, it was just a recognition. And that to me was probably the most rewarding, you know, working something like that. I never thought I'd like it because, it, you know, it's not as fun as chasing cars or you know, 911 calls. And, it, you know, I mean, it, you know, a lot of us, you know, we're younger, we like this, you like these hot calls. But, you know, as you go through your career, need to branch out, but you really saw the value of community policing. And again, we do have beats, you know, there is a priority, but again, I think we're shorter staff, so you're seeing less of that. And then we're going call to call to call in cars, and we're not interacting as much as we should be. So again, the chief doesn't need me to advocate for more cops, but it'd be really great from a patrol officer standpoint to see more police officers so more of these opportunities come back, because it's worth it. And if people know you, they talk to you. And, you know, you're time and time again, you know, anywhere you go, you know, if you know the neighborhood cop or if you know the beat cops, you're here probably 90% of their shift, people will come to you. And I think that's where the collaboration is. And then when something bad happens, they trust you enough to talk to you. If they don't know you, some communities will not come and talk to you. That, to me, that's common sense. So if I could make any changes, if I was chief for a day, I'd get more cops, but I'd put an effort, you know, a larger effort in that.
Okay. Thank you for that comprehensive answer. Janelle, you've been sitting here listening. You're African-American female in the community. You have some concerns, I know. What question would you have for this candidate, police officer, veteran, in his quest to succeed Omar Ilhan?
Sure. Well, I want to say thank you for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I do want to say that I've had some issues with Ilhan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but I read an article where you were being interviewed online, and you said that she's traveling the world, she's fighting the president on Twitter, she's not doing anything in the district, and I couldn't agree more because I've always, since I've been watching her, I like her spunk and her fire, which is more of like a celebrity type of thing. And I think that the problem with politics today is that we kind of gravitate towards those people because of their energy, but it doesn't mean that they're going to be productive. Just because they have a fiery personality does not mean that they're going to bring about productive change locally. So I do think that she is engaged way too much with the president and even international things. I see her more as being on the UN Council than winning this election again and being.
No, that's a good point. We've said that too.
I don't,
you know, it's like you're advocating. It's great that you are. Don't get me wrong. I know she's in the Foreign Affairs Committee. And I'm, you know what, I try to be as fair as I can with her, but it seems like every day she ticks somebody off, you know, some comment. And, you know, it just, I'd like to see her look inward, you know, and I've heard a lot of that from their community. But I cut you off.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just had to throw
No problem. I just totally agree. I do want someone who is more locally focused. and not so internationally focused, although I know that she's from the international community. You know, I don't, I just feel like a lot of the African Americans specifically, our issues are a little bit different than foreign Black issues and other immigrant communities. Mm-hmm. And we can't put them all in the same fishbowl. There's separate issues that need to be dealt with separately. And even, you know, I've noticed police respond to immigrant communities different than they do African-American communities. It seems a little bit more hostile. But I just think that, like you said earlier, connecting with the communities more. You mentioned you were from Hibbing, Minnesota, and mm-hmm. I'm sure there's not, just like in Minnesota in general, there's not a very large African-American population. But in Hibbing, I'm sure it's a lot lower than it is in Minneapolis. And have you, during your years in the police force in Minneapolis, have you initiated outreach programs for the community? Have you been a leader in that to kind of connect more with the people that you're policing so that there's a more of an understanding between the police and the citizens and the communities that they're patrolling?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. You know, I think recently, like I said, the last 4 years I worked as a beat officer, it was a different kind of reward, is actually, you know, getting out there and talking with people. That was okay. Most beneficial. I think when starting, you want to do all the fun stuff, like I said, chasing cars, going at people's guns, doing all this kind of stuff that, you know. But, you know, there's so much more to it. And I do agree. I've never had a problem working in any community. Matter of fact, even in the 5th Precinct, we're in the west side of 35W primarily. You know, you work, you know, you're a white guy and you're in minority communities, but you know what? They're really, you know, I never had any issues, you know, talking to people coming up to me.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but I know you have.
No.
The community might have a different perspective on that, where they feel that they can't relate to you or to, they don't feel the connection. Now you might say, yeah, it's easy to do this, but it may not be so easy for the community to receive you. That's what I'm saying.
No, and that's fair. That's more than fair. Yes. I know. I guess, like you said, the longer you get in the job, you do understand, you know, there's different people, there's different concerns. You see it more, I guess. So I guess you mature in the job. And, you know, we'd like to see, you know, we're trying to hire more minorities coming in the department. We're just not getting a lot of people that want to come in to, you know, help the department reflect the community it serves. And there seems to be a problem recruiting sometimes. So maybe better outreach in recruiting, getting more people into the department.
I can't really give an answer why,
but, you know, I think the department should reflect the communities you serve, and 100% agree with that. So
yeah,
I think we need better outreach, you know, in recruiting people. Hitting these schools, talking to these kids at a young age, I'd like to see that. And we are trying. I'm not saying Minneapolis is doing it. I know St. Paul's doing a good job doing that, too.
Okay, well, good. Yeah, if you could create more initiatives for that, that's something mm-hmm. that I would definitely appreciate in a candidate to actually make that one of their priorities, to make that more attractive to the communities that they're serving mm-hmm. to join the police organizations. With the Black male unemployment rate in Minneapolis being so high, and I just as a police officer, do you see a lot of just when you're like patrolling or picking up, you know, criminals, do you see a lot of it, or have you seen in your tenancy as a police officer, Black males, specifically African American, just not, do you see them just unemployed and not having much to do, so they're engaging in crime? And how would you address that unemployment rate specifically with African American males in your district if you're running?
I think across the board, if nobody has anything to do, there's going to be things that people are going to gravitate to, regardless of where you come from. There's still an economic disparity, undoubtedly. Okay, and you know, I would like to see that changed. You know, what I don't see people do or say in schools is there's a, you know, promoting things like trade schools and things like that. I, you know, maybe they're doing it a little more, but we're discussing that, you know, what would be something really good, you know, in North Minneapolis? Well, the trades are screaming for people. If we could get out there and, you know, if they could actively recruit, or, you know, I'd definitely push that. I'm a union guy. My dad was a pipe fitter, but, you know, there's carpentry, electricians, painters, you know, you name it, they're so short of people. You know, if we could get to be able to promote that a little better, you know, is there economic development that could happen, say, on the north side? Yes. I mean, I definitely have to look into that more, but there are options, and I think we need to promote that better. So I'd steer people anytime I get a chance, say, hey, look at trade schools. It's a, you know, short time of schooling and boom, you're out there making some decent money, a livable wage. And that's what my father kind of always said, you know, he being a pipe fitter, you know, he's talking about that livable wage. Well, there's some great opportunities if we get some people to advocate a little better than they are. I'd like to see
Absolutely.
That. Also, there's the military and there's other organizations that we could steer people towards that too,
okay.
would, you know, give them some good job skills and opportunities.
Yeah, and that kind of goes with the criminal reform part of it too, where if you see a repeat offender and they just don't
mm-hmm.
have the knowledge of the resources that are out there, you know, putting stuff like that, and we know when they're leaving jail and giving them a pamphlet of opportunities for them to try different things to kind of move their life in a different direction so they're not continuing to repeat the same
mm-hmm.
offenses, and offering solutions like maybe a pamphlet with those trade schools and other things that they could be doing. I think we need more of that reform part of it too, so that
yes. no, that's a good
it doesn't
idea.
Just
Definitely
stay on the
point.
Increase. Yeah. Okay. I think that is all the questions that I have for now.
Well, thank
all
you.
Right, all
I appreciate
right.
it.
Okay.
Thanks, Janelle. Our numbers, real quick here, our number, we're not going to keep you much longer here, Chris. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you would like to ask a question or just call in and join our conversation here. Chris Kelly, Minnesota Student 5, candidate for Congress, running against the incumbent and a group of let me ask you this before we get to let you go or let you make you know let people know where they can donate and find your website and things like that. What do you think about the stack of GOP candidates that are lined up to run against Hillary Clinton for Congress? Do you have any opinions about that? I'm not talking bad about them or anything, but
no,
you know, I'm looking for winners. So, what is your opinion and how do you think they will fare? Differently.
Well, I think
in
general, you know, doing the research of the district, even if every Republican showed up, voted for them, they'd be lucky to get 18-19%. It's just such a hard, so heavily Democratic area or Democrat, you know, infested, I'll call it. How about that? It's just really, it's really going to be tough for the GOP. And a lot of GOP people privately admitted that. There's some good candidates, you know, I'll name them. Lacey Johnson, good guy, good background. You know, I think he'll be the front runner unless somebody primaries him, but, it's going to be tough for the GOP just because of in sheer numbers. I know another
okay.
candidate kind of jumped in late, Dahlia, you know, she came out of nowhere, lived in the district 4 months and she's running now. So, you know, I don't know what the deal is with that. But again, you know, it's not negative. Hey, anybody's right to run if they move here, but I just think it'll be tough. I really do.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah,
I know there's
I,
a number of Democrats challenging Ilhan. You know, I think
yeah.
Ilhan's obviously going to get the nomination, but, you know, you're seeing a lot. There's people who are kind of, you know, throwing their hat in the ring too, going to challenge her. So, you mm-hmm. know, you never know. You could be surprised.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is
like,
myself as a – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I said I would love to be surprised in November.
And you never know what they say about Trump, you know, way back. There's no way, and look what happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I think this election is going to be – you're going to see a record turnout. There's another reason why I think I really have a shot. We, you know, with an independent in here, I only need 37%. We have plenty of disaffected Democrats, plenty of disaffected Republicans, a lot of moderates who I think we can attract. So we're going to do our darndest to do well. We're going to get out and campaign, and we're going to have a good showing. And at the end of the day, whether I get elected or not, the goal is I'd like to see more people step into the Independence Party, more regular people,
okay.
blue-collar people, like see teachers, you know, cops, you know, union people throw their hat in the ring and get involved. Because honestly, I believe the framers, when they set up our country, is they wanted private citizens to be as engaged as possible, step in, do some time, and leave, go back to private life and have somebody else come in. We'd like to see a good turnover of people and people be involved in our democracy. I think that's the key thing. So if I can get some people come to the Independence Party, throw their hat in the ring and do what they can, that'd be great. That would be a goal. That would be a win for us.
Okay, with that said, Mr. Kelly, where can people find you and donate to your cause if they so choose, a website, a phone number, and maybe your next appearance somewhere if they can come out and meet you? Would you like to tell us that information?
Yes. On Twitter, I'm at Chris Kelly MN. That's Kelly with an EY. And then my website is Chris Kelly, again with an EY, 2020.com. And so we need volunteers. Donations always be appreciated. Right now, I think next week I'm talking to Reverend Tim Christopher on the 7th of March. So I'll be in his podcast. And any future events we will, again, put out on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah. I'll be checking closely for that. I appreciate your you calling in, taking the time out. I know you do the overnight shift, and then we've been trying to plan this, but we're going to have you on again sometime in between September and October in that area right before the election, because we want to find out where you are, what you're thinking, and how things are going. And we'd like to talk to you twice during this campaign year. This is the first time. Again, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your work as a police officer in Minneapolis. And have a great upcoming next week and the rest of the year during this campaign time. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Don. I greatly appreciate it. It's been fun being on. Appreciate it. You have a good day.
Okay. Yeah, you too. That was Chris Kelly, Minnesota CD5 candidate for Congress. And we'll see what happens. We appreciate him calling in. I don't know why anniversary is playing. Oh, again, Janelle, this is wild. Our call number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. There's a lot of stuff going on in the news, and I'm kind of nervous, Janelle, because I don't want to be wearing one of those masks when I go to the grocery store, go to work, or something like, you know, everyone's this coronavirus just seems to be getting people in an uproar. I don't know if anything in Minnesota has it, but what have you been hearing weird stuff about that?
Yes, they're saying that it's actually confirmed that it is community spreading now, meaning that people who have had no contact with anyone who traveled to China, Wuhan, China, or traveled recently are now being confirmed positive for coronavirus in California. So it's spreading through the community now, and I think that's the most recent scare that, you know, rightfully so, we should be a little concerned about that.
I agree.
What do you think about President Trump's dismissive comment stating that it's just going to go away?
Yeah, well, you know what? He's not a doctor, and I'm not defending him because people are going to say, like Mr. M, who calls in all the time, he'll say, well, I don't know about your love affair with 45. But, I mean, you got to take this thing seriously. You can't be dismissive, especially if you're the president of the United States, because this could wipe out a whole bunch of folks. I mean, I compare this with the HIV AIDS. When in 1979, I went into the Army, and a lot of people know this, I'm a factor VIII hemophiliac, a bleeder. So if from my teeth getting cleaned by the dentist to me getting a bruise, I have to go to the hospital and get this stuff called recombinant factor VIII. It's a synthetic factor VIII. But before they created that drug, they did not have it in 1979. They would give you this cryoprecipitate, where if your blood was A positive, they take some of it, they'd spin it till it separates and the white stuff would be on top, and they would give me that intravenously. And when I went into the Army in 1979, I did not need any transfusions from 79 until after I got out of the Army. But all the hemophiliacs that I knew that were going through this clinic, they thought my brother and I were weird because it's basically an Irish disease, so they're figuring out how two Negroes had hemophilia. But and they'd have us come to the University of Minnesota, Mayo Clinic, Rochester, and so we got to know a bunch of kids our age from the time I was 7 to the time I graduated from high school. And so what had happened, they didn't identify the HIV-AIDS virus in this cryoprecipitate until way later, and then by then, a bunch of hemophiliacs died of HIV-AIDS. And so this is reminding me of if these folks aren't proactive, the president cannot be dismissive to answer your question. But we need not to be in a panic, but be proactive to try to develop some kind of inoculation, shot, serum, vaccine, or whatever, to make sure that a lot of people don't get killed off. Because you know, in these pandemics, a lot of folks of color die. And I just think that we need to do a better job. With that said, oh, we have a caller. Incredible.
Yay.
We have 13 minutes of the show. Let's see who this is. Oh, our studio line producers say this is Mr. M from his palatial estate in Minneapolis. Mr. M, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. And to your co-host, Ms. Jalil, I love your take on things. But, Don, you're at it again. Talking out of both sides of your mouth against 45. Yeah, I mean, with 45. Same thing. You say on the one hand.
Yay!
On one hand, take it. You know, take it serious. This is the real. This is the thing. But then your great poobah, 45, oh, we have it under control. We have it all under control. We know how. He hasn't displayed any leadership or any knowledge of any science or any medical. What? Oh, he has the great HUD secretary, supposed to be a great doctor. Why doesn't he get involved in this? Okay, another incompetent. Just like his education person, DeVos, another incompetent. I mean, who can have faith in what 45's plan is? He never has a plan. And he looks like now he's under so much pressure. I saw him on TV the other day. His face was all bloated. Eyes were all baggy. He is just kind of just lied himself and talked himself into a corner. And so the big deal is when these serious things happen, you have to have leadership. You have to have people that really can pull people together and say, look, why don't we get an organization? Let's get the best medical people in the world on this. Let's convene something to really talk about how we can pool resources to do this. I see no plan. He gets on TV and says, oh, we've got it under control. It'll just go away miraculously. Oh, and you continue to prop this up. I don't get it.
Can you respond to that, Don? I am responding. Wonder what the president in his infinite wisdom says, okay, we can't create another construct like the cure for cancer, where you have people that have been working on a cure for many, many years. It's turned into, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, I'm just saying that you created an infrastructure where if there becomes a cure, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. So it's more productive to search for a cure, continue funding, continue these people and these CEOs and these big pharma and government organizations making millions and millions of dollars a year. But to find a cure, that shuts off. So wonder if President just said, okay, we're not going to focus or create a national panic. And I'm going to say it might have been a PR move. I don't know. I'm not defending him, not taking anything away or adding anything to it. I'm just saying that maybe he's not trying to create a panic, a national panic, even though there is one already. And he's not trying to add to it where normally he is trying to add to the create and start stir the pot. I'm just trying to give him the benefit of the doubt without crawling under his arm or anything like that.
he needs to show that he has some leader. I mean, just coming out to say, oh, we've got it under control, and waving his hand around and, you know, calling people, you know, they're incompetent disasters and losers. I mean, he's so frivolous in his way of explaining what's going on. I mean, it needs to be kind of not just a, oh, we've got it under control, don't worry about it, but it needs to be a substantive type calming thing where we have plans and we have other people brought in to really that have expertise in these areas, because the historically, as you know, these things, plagues and diseases and these things can move fast and they can have devastating effects. And as you say, on African Americans, because not having access that a lot of people have to great medical care for whatever reason, it's I don't have any confidence in him to do anything of substance. And you have to hope that the people around him and that, you know, that they'll come up with something that can let the people know that they're actually working, that they have a plan, that they see this coming and that they can warn us. They get the information before we do. I don't want to just hear, well, I've got a plan, it's going to go away miraculously. It's just like the flu. No, it's not. It's not just like the flu. I mean, this is the pandemic. This is something totally different. And so I just don't believe in him. I just don't believe he has the expertise and skill. And I think politically, hopefully, this can bring people to their senses. The only problem to me with that is I don't know outside, who can you really have confidence in. The Democrats can't even count votes. Then they go and can't even count for, and this is not the election. I mean, but Iowa's been doing this. They knew this was coming, and then they couldn't do it. I am just.
You're absolutely right. So let me cut you off, but let me say this. I pulled this up earlier and printed it out, but there's this website called World Meter, and it's a part of like the National Health Organization. I can't remember the exact or the proper name, but right now in the world, there's an estimated, well, they said there's 85,733 cases of the coronavirus active, or cases, period. The deaths, 2,933. There are 39,797 people that have recovered. So that seems to me, and I'm not a doctor. I mean, I could play one on TV. I'm not a doctor, but if you have 39,797 people that have recovered, your antivirus is right there, I would contend, okay? So the active cases are showing here, there's 35,000 mild condition. There's 7,000 out of that group, out of that first number, 7,818 serious or critical. And the closed cases, there's 42,000 closed cases. And, like, again, 39,797 recovered and discharged from the hospital. And, again, 2,933 deaths so far. But I'm looking at this piece here, M and Janelle, and I'm seeing that, you know, people in Iran, at least 210 people are dead, and across to South Korea, and it's affecting everything, including the stock market, trade, airline travel, travel in general, and I guess to both of you guys' point is we have to figure out how this thing even initiated and how to stop it.
Well,
Mr.
Allen, Don, everything you said is, you know, has educated me and enlightened me. But I would like to hear that from 45. I'd like to hear that he's actually looking at these numbers, that he's opening up a book or opening up a computer or have somebody with him that's giving him this information so he can give it to us. I mean, at this point, what I'm hearing, I vote for you before I vote for him. He seems like he knows the first thing about this stuff. So that's, I mean, it's about getting the the information, letting us know what you're doing. What are we doing to try to quell this? You know, are we under and warning us if we really are under siege? Sometimes, you know, we really need to know the real story. I mean, so that we can do what needs to be done. So I again, my faith in 45 is really, and it comes down to, you know, when things get into deep water. See, we need somebody that can really get in there and do these things. And he just hasn't shown it. He hasn't shown it to me. Maybe I'm just the only one that sees it. But I don't.
You might be.
I just don't believe. And then another statement you made earlier is that, okay, the stock market, he's under 45, is doing great. It's humming. Well, I picked up the paper right now. I see it's just tanking. I see the arrows going down and going submerged.
That's because of the virus, right? Isn't that because of what's going on with this virus and the trade is virtually anything from China is a standstill. You know, anything from that part of the world is a standstill. So, of course, it's going to affect other systems exponentially because of this. Because you don't want, you know, we don't want the whole United States West Coast laid up in the hospital with the coronavirus, with kids, families, everybody dying off. You know, that's a pandemic. That'd be crazy. Stock market is looking. I listen to NPR on a regular basis. The first thing that NPR ever said that was real to me was that the coronavirus has affected the stock market. I said, damn, y'all start telling the truth. You know, and I'm paraphrasing there, but that's like the first thing, you know, I heard them say that was actually factual for a long time. And so, yeah, you're right. You can't. I did say the economy was doing good because it is in the United States overall, if you want to stand back and look at the big picture. But, again, to make a long story short, there are residual effects from this thing that, all in all, at the end of the day, you're right, Janelle's right, the president has to take a serious look at it. And with that
yeah,
said,
there were some testing, too. There are some testing issues in California. The CDC said they hadn't gotten the proper funding to get out the proper amount of testing to test in the large numbers, which is the government's fault, you know, that they're not getting the then they finally sent out testing for the coronavirus. It was flawed testing, and they have not heard back when they're going to redistribute flawed that could properly diagnose coronavirus. So there are several issues, and that's pretty much why in California it's spreading, because it took them, they didn't have the proper testing kits there from the CDC, and that's partly due to, you know, the government, the president, and everyone else not taking this so seriously. So we don't even know when they're going to get the proper testing. So we actually don't know how many people have coronavirus. We just know what's been reported. And since the testing is so flawed, we don't even know if those numbers are accurate. It could be way more than 90,000 across the world. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I walked into CVS yesterday in St. Paul, and there's people in there with their faces covered up with masks, you know, going to that minute clinic. I got the hell out of there. And I said, I'll go somewhere else and buy what I need. I just don't want to get sick. But with that said, Janelle, and thanks for the call, by the way, Em. He's off the air or off live right now, but he is listening in the queue. Thank you for that call, as always, calling in and challenging us. I appreciate that. Janelle, it's been a great show. Hour flew by. We have a minute before the show ends. You got have any final words or questions before I give it to James Brown?
No, I'm just saying people should start paying attention to more of these independent candidates, because like the caller said, they're not getting it done on either side. So should we look elsewhere? Should we look in the middle? My final words.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
Take it away, Brother Jeff Brown.
Take your eyes to make a path.